Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chassadovsky. This program is coming to you from Montreal through RBN in Texas. Our guest this morning is lawyer Gail Davidson, who is with Lawyers Against the War. She's a solicitor and lawyer based in Vancouver. And her organization has waged a campaign against George W. Bush, former president of the United States, who happens to be on a private visit to Canada. And there is a protest movement which is ongoing at this very moment regarding George W. Bush, not as president, but as war criminal. And this process, in fact, is not new. It's linked up with initiatives ongoing in the United States. Gail Davidson, welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you share your views on this important day.
Thank you, Michel.
What is the situation in Calgary? I've got news that George W. has actually arrived there.
Yes, I understand he arrived last night, actually.
And is he? He's slated to speak at 12 noon today, Central Time. Is that correct?
Yes, he is. That's correct.
Could you tell us a little bit how this speech has unfolded? You have in fact confronted the Canadian authorities regarding his visit to Canada, and you have sent a letter actually to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Could you give us a little bit of detail on what's going on in this
regard? Certainly, Michel. First of all, when we learned that Mr. Bush was coming to Canada for a private visit, basically as a paid speaker, we wrote a letter to the Canadian government. We addressed the letter to the Prime Minister and the Ministers of Immigration and Public Safety and the Attorney General of Canada, reminding them that people who were credibly accused of committing war crimes, crimes against humanity, torture is one of those designated crimes, by the way, are inadmissible to Canada when there's reasonable grounds to believe that they've had any involvement in such crimes. And we laid out some of the references to the overwhelming evidence that the Bush administration has indeed directed, supervised, widespread and long-term system of the use of torture in a number of countries around the world, and said, so he's inadmissible. We also pointed out that under the Convention Against Torture, when a person against whom such allegations have been made crosses the border and enters Canadian territory, then the Canadian government has a duty under the Convention Against Torture to conduct investigations, and if there's enough evidence to initiate a prosecution, or alternatively extradite that person to a country that is willing and able to prosecute him. So we tried to make it obvious that the best route would be to prevent him from coming. We received no reply, so on March the 11th, we sent a letter to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police asking them to do two things, asking them to advise the Canadian government that Mr. Bush was an inadmissible person and to initiate an investigation of Mr. Bush. And we have heard absolutely, we've had no response whatsoever from the government or from the RCMP.
Well, we'll have to go to commercial break. This is the Global Research News Hour, and we are discussing
all right.
George W. Bush's visit to Canada. Stay with us. We'll be back after a short commercial break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour, which comes to you from Montreal. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest on today's program is Gail Davidson, who is a lawyer based in Vancouver and who has been extremely active in issues pertaining to violation of international law, issues of crimes against humanity. I think it's important, Gail, also that people understand a bit the history of this initiative, because back in 2004, when Bush came to Canada on an official visit, you actually launched a lawsuit or a procedure in a Canadian court.
That's correct. What we did then, Michelle, is we filed an information in a Canadian criminal information. In the U.S., that would be called an indictment. We filed a 7-count information alleging that Mr. Bush, as president and commander-in-chief of the U.S. Army, had aided, abetted, and counseled torture at Abu Ghraib in Guantanamo Bay. And that information was tossed out at the first court level, which is called the provincial court, on the basis that Mr. Bush had immunity from criminal prosecution as a sitting head of state. We appealed to the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeal, but neither of those courts ever adjudicated on the substantive issues because the court said that the Attorney General of Canada had to consent to proceedings against Mr. Bush before the court could consider the legitimacy of any aspect of those proceedings. So that no longer applies. Mr. Bush no longer has any immunity. As probably your listeners are aware, there's international decisions, the Pinochet decision by the House of Lords in England, for example, saying that even where there's a statute that provides immunity to a sitting head of state, which there was in England, there isn't in Canada, that immunity no longer applies when the alleged offense is torture and after the person has ceased being the head of state. So Mr. Bush is liable to prosecution, at least for torture, I would think, in possibly as many as 140 countries in the world, because that's how many countries have ratified the Convention Against Torture.
And if we look at press reports, even coming from the Canadian press, because it still has hit the news in Canada, and it's also hit the news in the United States. You were interviewed on MSNBC yesterday. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And this morning I did an interview on Democracy Now.
Well, that's so. At least I think Mr. Bush should understand that wherever he goes, he will face the possibility of prosecution. You mentioned that in the 2004 procedure, the courts didn't actually throw it out on the grounds that the charges were baseless. They threw it out on the grounds that he had diplomatic immunity as head of state. And as you point out, he no longer has, as a private citizen visiting Calgary, and in fact, it's a rather lucrative business to be a former head of state and a former war criminal, because it's 1,500 guests. That's what, $500 a.
I think it's $400 a seat.
Those are Canadian dollars, are they not?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
But it's still a fair. It's a good. For a 1-hour talk, it's not a bad.
It's a goodly sum of money.
Yeah. Sure.
Yes. Yes. Another thing of interest to your listeners is that you're quite right. When the provincial court judge threw out the information on the basis of head of state immunity, not only didn't they didn't throw it out after examining the evidence and saying, well, there's not reasonable grounds to think that he was involved in torture. And don't forget, this is November 2004. We didn't have an opportunity to put before the judge anything except the scantest information, but we can assume that he would have been aware of many of the allegations at that point. But the judge said, Ms. Davidson, perhaps you should be bringing this prosecution in the International Criminal Court. Now, this is a provincial court judge, so he probably wouldn't have realized that those proceedings couldn't be brought against Mr. Bush in the International Criminal Court. But he certainly, I'm just telling your listeners that to indicate the judge was certainly not rejecting the information on the basis of...
I think that's very important. I read in the Toronto Star this morning a quotation by presidential expert Bert Rockman, who has written a book, who has edited a book about President Bush, and he says, and it's a little bit convoluted, he says, while it is clear there were violations of constitutional and statutory laws during Bush's two terms, it is unlikely charges will be pursued against him, and the current administration has no interest in pursuing that particular avenue. The feeling is now let the past be the past. Now,
yes.
With war crimes, you can't let the past be past because those war crimes were committed.
Well, not only that, but when President Obama said something to the effect of we want to move forward, not look back, but as history fulsomely demonstrates, when atrocities have been occurred, the only way of moving forward in the sense of moving to a place where those atrocities are never going to occur again is by acknowledging and remedying the atrocities. Otherwise, there's no possibility of moving forward. And in spite of the fact that the U.S. administration and maybe Congress also don't have an appetite right now for even investigating members of the Bush administration, two-thirds of the American people in a recent Gallup poll said that they wanted investigations of the Bush administration for torture and other crimes. And there's many, many human rights specialists, legal specialists in the United States who are not just calling for investigations and prosecutions, but actually preparing briefs and preparing for to present such things. So, for example, there's a group called the Robert Jackson Steering Committee, and that group is made up of a number of law professors and other people, and that group is planning on presenting a lengthy criminal complaint against Mr. Bush and 30 other members of the Bush administration, the civil and the military, Bush administration, sometime in mid-April. The Center for Constitutional Rights in New York has called for investigations and prosecutions. The American Civil Liberties Union has called for the same thing. So just because President Obama said we'd like to forget about it doesn't mean to say that either the American people or people concerned with justice and the enforcement of international law in the United States are going to agree with that or even allow that.
And then there's also the initiative by Kucinich on the investigation to this so-called executive assassination ring, which has just occurred. But that's directed largely against Dick Cheney, is it not?
Yes. But that's a very good example, Michelle, of elected representatives who are saying, my duty as an elected representative is to pursue this.
Absolutely. In other words, it can't be shoved under the rug. Related issue is was the invasion and massacre in Gaza, which ironically, in a bitter irony, occurred between between two presidencies in late December. How do you view the responsibilities in this regard? It was formerly under the Bush administration. They remained completely silent, but it was also, so did Obama remain somewhat silent on these crimes.
Well, obviously, the principal people for investigation and prosecution would be people in Israel who directed and authorized it. If your question is directed to what responsibility political leaders have who encouraged the commission of international crimes or the continuation of international crimes, either by their acts or by their silence, that's a different issue.
With regard to Canada, Canada signed an agreement with Israel on national security, both in Canada and Israel, and it's an agreement on policing borders in both respective countries. That I think also is an issue as far as the Canadian government is concerned. The complicity they might have. I know we're diverting a little bit, but...
Yes. I don't know if you know, Michelle, there is an action in Canada that... I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the style of cause, but it's been filed in Quebec, an action against a Canadian company involved...
We'll have to go to commercial break.
All right.
We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chastodowski. This is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest is Gail Davidson, lawyer based in Vancouver, who has launched an initiative directed against George W. Bush, who is currently visiting Canada, pending war crimes charges already filed in a 2000 legal procedure in a Canadian court. Welcome back, Gail, to the program. The question I'd like to ask is the following. There have been in recent months various war crime charges directed against, particularly the president of Sudan, but also there have been indictments directed against leaders, political leaders of Serbia by the Hague War Crimes Tribunal.
Yes.
And the question is, one has a feeling that there's some kind of double standard, so to speak, because the victims of these wars, they are targeted as war criminals, but those who actually conduct the wars are never targeted.
Yes, obviously that's the, if you look at the record of prosecutions in the International Criminal Court, that's the inescapable impression that the court only deals in either victor's justice, if you want to call it that, or deals with prosecutions of leaders of states that are poverty stricken, not economically powerful, etc. And that I don't think that's something that's surprising, and I think that's something that will change, and so the court will become a legitimate court if and when there's public pressure for it to do so. So in other words, I think that there's a whole educative process that has to take place with regard to international humanitarian law. Many, many of the people that have spoken to me, Michelle, over the George Bush thing are still wrestling with the idea that the law really does apply to the powerful, people in power. So, and that's what the law is.
Absolutely.
People in the street, lawyers, law professors, judges are getting used to that idea, and they're ahead of the comfort zone of politicians. Politicians aren't comfortable with that at all because, of course, for a number of human reasons that we can guess at, one of them is that Mr. Harper would regard Mr. Bush as his colleague, probably. And the other thing is that a president or a prime minister would say, well, what about me? What if I engage in activities that are illegal? Then I'm going to be prosecuted, hunted down and prosecuted. Somebody asked me during an interview earlier this morning, they said, well, wouldn't it be a very dangerous precedent if an ex-president were charged with torture? And I said, it would be a very dangerous precedent for Mr. Bush, yes, and other senior members of governments that engaged in torture if such a prosecution were launched. If it isn't, it's a very dangerous precedent for the rest of us.
Well, absolutely, because in effect it acknowledges the fact that the state is involved in criminal activity.
And is entitled to be involved in criminal activity.
Precisely, but does it not raise the broader issue as you suggested, that we're not dealing with a single individual, we're dealing with a collectivity of senior officials, members of Congress, and also of lobby groups which actually support this political process, so that it really is a much broader the issue of war crimes is much broader than simply identifying a few people at the top of government and saying, well, these are the people responsible.
Yes, I agree, but I think that one has to start identifying the people who are primarily responsible for authoring and directing the criminal activity in order to dissuade others from supporting, encouraging, and participating in those activities in the future.
Well, absolutely.
I feel strongly that the proper place to start is at the top.
Although the tendency when the issues of torture is that the people at the top tend to blame the people at the bottom who are executing orders, as in the case of Abu Ghraib, for instance.
Yes, well, certainly initially when those photos came out in the spring of 2004, that was the song that the administration was singing, that the torture that was demonstrated, prohibited ill treatment. Oh, sorry, you have to...
We'll have to go to a commercial break again.
That's
so we'll
fine.
Be back, and then we'll have a longer piece of time.
Okay.
Stay with us.
Okay, Michelle.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michelle Chosadovsky. Our program is an initiative of globalresearch.ca. Our guest is a distinguished lawyer based in Vancouver, Gail Davidson, who has launched an initiative directed against George W. Bush, who is currently visiting Calgary. Gail, do we have any detailed reports on how the protest movement is proceeding in Calgary?
I don't have any reports this morning because when I phoned, everybody is busy with the demonstration. The one thing of interest that is that the news coverage has been quite astonishing, given the fact that the last time we tried to prevent Mr. Bush coming from Canada, we couldn't have paid mainstream media to cover even a single word of it. And the coverage is very good. And I just got an email before coming on the show, Michelle, from a person who has tickets just to go and listen to Mr. Bush, wondering, offering some of the tickets to people participating in the demonstration.
Oh, I see. So that the people participating in the demonstration would pay $500 to enter the Rome Awards.
No, they would
get free tickets to go in.
Free tickets. So I don't. I've passed that along to the event organizers, and I don't know what will happen in that regard.
Well, that's a very interesting. It's a very interesting perspective. Is there going to be a press conference later this morning?
There has already been a press conference in Calgary. We're holding a press conference in Vancouver at 12:30. I understand from news reports that the people in Calgary are collecting shoes, and as part of their demonstration of opposition to Mr. Bush's visit to Canada. And I assume that by collecting piles of shoes, they're wanting to make a couple of messages both to Mr. Bush and the Canadian government that they'd like the law to step in, and they'd like to tell Mr. Bush that they'd like to give him the boot even if the Canadian government refuses to do so.
Are they actually planning to throw these shoes at Bush?
No, I don't think there's any such plan, none that I know of. But of course, they're because of the incident where the journalist threw the shoe at Mr. Bush in Iraq, they're wanting to give a similar message.
But these are big sort of Canadian winter boots, right?
not sandals.
that's it. So I think he should be very careful, because Canadians are pretty good. It's throwing their shoes, particularly at this time of the year. So, this is a very, I think it's very important that people across America, because our program is reaching people in California and in Texas and also on the East Coast, and it's very important that people realize that here up in Canada, often referred to as the icebox, we are involved in a major action against the former president of the United States. But as you suggested earlier, the issues are broader than simply the president. It has to do with an individual. It has to do with a whole governmental structure.
Yes, yes. And I hope your listeners know that there's many, many Americans, who have communicated their support of there being actions taken like this by people around the world.
Well, it's very it's very important because it also impinges on politics in the United States.
Yes, yes. So, for example, when we first wrote to the Canadian government, we received a letter of support from Ramsey Clark. And the Robert Jackson Steering Committee supports our action. Pretty well anybody who's supporting enforcement of the law is supporting, a peaceful and sober attempt to persuade politicians, educate them of what the law is, and then persuade them to take the necessary steps to see that it's enforced. And, it's, of course, we haven't been successful yet, and we might not be successful very far, till far into the future, but much earlier than the 25 years it took to prosecute Pinochet. And I just want to tell you something very hopeful about persistence in Pakistan. For instance, myself and a bunch of other lawyers had been trying to give support to the lawyers' movement in Pakistan, who've been trying to get the Chief Justice Chaudhry reinstated, and they've been doing that since March of 2007 and since November of 2007 to try and get all of the other judges that were sacked when they refused to compromise their independence by signing a loyalty oath to Musharraf. And that has resulted in, you know, thousands of lawyers and millions of people in Pakistan have just persisted in marching to insist that the government listen to them. They said, we want an independent judiciary. We want to be able to have access to the courts to settle our disputes and to restrict the powers of government when they use the powers in an illegal way through the peaceful means of having an independent judiciary. They wouldn't take no for an answer. Many people were injured. Some people died. Many people certainly lost their incomes. And on Sunday, the Pakistan government agreed to reinstate, first of all, Chaudhry and then the other judges. So this is fabulous news.
Well, that's also very important in view of the fact that the United States is involved in illegal air raids on Pakistan and is bombing villages in the tribal areas and in derogation of international law. And this is continued. And it has a tacit, it doesn't have the support of the Pakistani parliament, but it has the tacit support of the Pakistani president. But that's I think a related consideration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So, I think that by being persistent, we can make small but significant bits of progress in trying to ensure that the horrific atrocities of the past aren't the atrocities of the future. And when there isn't any legal recourse taken, they are. So, for example, this morning I was listening to the radio and I heard somebody talking about the need for the United States to patrol and bomb the border area between Pakistan and Afghanistan because they said the hills there, the mountains in Pakistan were a sanctuary for extremists. And I thought, you know, people that are listening to this broadcast aren't remembering that wasn't that the reason for the brutal and spectacularly horrifying bombing of Cambodia and Laos?
That, precisely.
That the Viet Cong were hiding there? And, you know what I mean? Like, we have to remember these things are illegal, and the reason why they're illegal is because they're crazy and because they destroy people and they destroy cultures and they destroy environments. And in order for us all to survive, those acts have to be prohibited. So we have to look back and remember in history when we hear silly things like the U.S. has a duty to bomb the border area of Pakistan for some kind of security reason.
If we take a broader historical perspective on the two major wars which have been launched since 2001, namely Afghanistan in early October, barely 1 month after the 9/11 attacks, and then, of course, Iraq, which is 6 years ago, in fact, this week or next week. Afghanistan was launched using 9/11 as a pretext. Would you consider that as an illegal war?
Oh, absolutely, without a shred of a doubt. I don't think that there's anybody at this point in time who's suggesting that the bombing and invasion that commenced in October, I think it was October 9th, I think it was, of 2001, was sanctioned by any law. There isn't a law that you could point to that said that they could. The U.S. initially claimed self-defense under Article 51 of the UN Charter, and then they jumped into the NATO regulations and charter and said that when one member of NATO had the need of self-defense, then the whole of NATO could get together and help them with that. But, of course, the definition of self-defense completely excludes the bombing of Afghanistan. There's no aspect of, even if the it had later been conclusively proven that members of Al-Qaeda were responsible for the trade towers collapse and that members of Al-Qaeda had been in Afghanistan and had been being harbored in Afghanistan by the then Taliban government, that still would not have legitimated the aerial bombing. There's many working conventions. By working conventions, I mean conventions between countries around the world that are actually working, having to do with addressing, controlling all manner of threats and so-called terrorist threats and criminal activity, and those were would have been the appropriate response.
Well, absolutely. But I recall that in late September of 2001, the Taliban government actually approached the Bush administration on two occasions saying, if you have some evidence that Osama bin Laden is behind the 9/11 attacks, we'll be happy to deliver him to U.S. justice. And the Bush administration at the time turned down both of these initiatives, which had been channeled through diplomatic through bilateral relations between the two countries.
That's right. The Afghanistan government of the time, I believe, actually offered to turn Osama bin Laden, if he was there, over to a third country, not to the U.S. They offered to turn.
Oh, okay.
You're right that offer wasn't even treated as an offer, as far as the information that is available to me is concerned, that there was no effort to negotiate anything other than that. There was just the bombing commenced.
So that in effect, if we're looking at NATO countries, including Canada, then we are, in a sense, the heads of state and heads of government of those NATO countries are also complicit in war crimes.
That's
in as much
correct.
As they've participated in an illegal war.
That's correct, yes. Yes.
How would you distinguish between, because perhaps in people's perception, there are war crimes committed which are more at the tangible level of torture and killings of civilians on the one hand, and then there's the military operation per se, which is an invasion of a country and a bombing of a country. Can one make those distinctions?
Well, I think that one way to make the distinction is by deciding what offenses and what people to prosecute. And although I've never been a prosecuting attorney, one of the things that in our legal system in Canada, the police give a report of an offense to the Crown Counsel, we call them in Canada, but the prosecuting attorneys, and they are the ones that decide whether or not to proceed with the prosecution. And one of the bases for their decision is whether or not there is a chance of securing a conviction. So they don't use their resources to pursue cases where there's no chance of securing a conviction. So when people say, oh, well, why would Lawyers Against the War or the Robert Jackson Steering Committee or any other group of lawyers, why would they focus on bringing charges against Bush administration officials for torture? It's because of that assessment procedure in part.
Right. Well, I think we're really, I mean, in a sense, we're also analyzing history, and we're looking at a whole series of wars which have taken place in the so-called post-Cold War, post-World War II period, from the Korean War to the present. Mm-hmm. And in fact, could you perhaps address the issue of this history of war crimes? Because we're dealing with George W. Bush, but in effect, if we had to categorize all the war crimes which have been committed, let's say, from the Korean War to the present, we'd be dealing in something which is far more serious than.
That's correct. So even if you just restricted yourself to looking at the military activities of the U.S., for instance, if you looked at the U.S. Activities in Guatemala and Nicaragua and Chile and Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos and so on, and you'd say, okay, well, there's just too many crimes that have been committed, so we should just throw up our hands, and we couldn't possibly go back and investigate all of those responsible and prosecute them. But that's why we have to start somewhere. We have to start now. Because from my point of view, the reason why we keep having states resort to committing these crimes against populations who are essentially helpless to defend themselves, then we have to start with prosecutions, and the place to start isn't for crimes committed in Nicaragua in 1954, but crimes committed in Guantanamo Bay in Afghanistan.
We have to go to another commercial break. We'll be back after the break with the Global Research News Hour. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chossadovsky. Our program comes to you from Montreal, Canada, via Texas on the RBN network. Our guest is Gail Davidson, who is a spokesperson for Lawyers Against the War, prominent lawyer based in Vancouver, and we're discussing George W. or W., who is now visiting Calgary. Gail, there was a statement again in this morning's press, the Toronto Star,
yes,
quoting Christopher Sands, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And he says the following. He suggests that no matter where Bush goes, protesters will continue to dog him. But he also says that Bush has a very balanced sense of himself. He's not going to freak out about protesters, and has shown he has a good sense of humor about people protesting against him. How do you react to that type of commentary?
I don't think that there's whether or not Mr. Bush is sanguine about protesters or about the allegations made against him is really neither here nor there. We could say, well, is that an indicator of psychopathy? I don't know. I'm not saying that, but one could. It isn't germane to the issue of the fact that he is going to must be prosecuted, and he will be prosecuted. So he could keep hopping from country to country, and sometime or other, he's going to come to a country where proceedings have been initiated. I don't know when that will happen, but I trust that it will happen within the next 5 years.
Well, it's very important that he thinks twice before traveling as a private citizen and individual, but he will be hounded wherever he goes. I think that's very important.
Yes, and I can't express any opinion as to whether or not Mr. Bush has a quote, balanced sense of himself. Know nothing about that, but it has nothing to do with the allegations.
Well, it's also perhaps that he doesn't understand the seriousness of the acts, the political decisions which he has taken with regard to torture and war.
That may well be. Yes.
How are you going to pursue this matter? We've just about two or three more minutes on the program. What is the next step in your activities at the legal level?
The next step is to, within Canada, to meet with the lawyers and other people that are interested in pursuing the legal route and to do some research and look at the viability at the present time of the Canadian legal actions that are open to us and decide whether or not to pursue any one of those now or in the future. And the second thing is to continue a dialogue with law groups and justice groups around the world that are interested in, some of which are actually committed to pursuing prosecutions, and see how we can encourage groups to share resources so that we're not each working in our own country or our own region, but we can work together to ensure the enforcement of this very important body of law.
And in the United States itself, I presume that those legal actions are also going to be launched.
I would think that the United States is the place that is you can look at to be primarily. That's where the primary source of pressure to launch prosecutions.
We have to say goodbye. This is
goodbye,
the Global
Thank you.
Global Research News Hour.